Next week, Jews across the world will begin celebrating the festival of Passover. On Monday and Tuesday nights, Jewish families will commence their celebration of Passover with a Seder, a festive meal including the retelling of the story of the liberation of Israelites from slavery in ancient Egypt. Many a cook will spend days in the kitchen preparing for their Seders, so we thought it would be a good idea to get a bit of advice from America's foremost Jewish food writer, Joan Nathan. Joan Nathan is the author of 10 cookbooks, including her most recent Quiches, Kugels, and Couscous, My Search for Jewish Cooking in France, which was named one of the 10 best cookbooks of 2010 by NPR, Food and Wine, and Bon Appetit magazines. She's a regular contributor to the New York Times, and she's a two-time recipient of the James Beard Award for the Best American Cookbook. Joan Nathan, welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Joan, I have to admit that because I've been cooking from your books for so many years, you're a part of my family. And no one has had more influence on my cooking than you and my mother. So I hope I hope you won't mind if the slip of the tongue, if I address you incorrectly during the program today. Now, every Jewish holiday has its full course of foods, and Passover is no exception. Can we talk about what foods makes the Passover table different? Discuss some of the foods we'd see during Passover that we might not eat during other holidays?
Well, first of all, because there's no bread, no yeast, really, you're supposed to be in your home. You're supposed to get rid of all fermented and yeasted products. You have to have a different kind of cuisine. So that said, you can use flour, but flour that's been specially watched, and you eat matzah. So you might take the matzah, and actually very religious people do not do this at Passover. You make matzah balls out of matzah. That's what they originally were made out of. Now we have matzah meal, which is really just ground matzah. I make it my Passover Seder, a kremzel, which is like a matzah fritter with nuts and almonds and sugar. It's delicious. And then there's certain sort of iconic recipes, either in Sephardic or Ashkenazi homes, like gefilte fish, for example, which this year I'm going to try to make mine sort of pink and white. So the pink's going to be the center of the balls that I make of the gefilte fish.
How are you going to make them pink?
Well, I don't know if this is going to work, but this is what I'm going to try to do is take beets, grind them up, and then in the mix with matzo meal, I'm going to use a little bit of salmon, and evidently, according to my fishmonger, carp is also going to make it pinky.
Interesting.
So I'm going to make them pink with that, and then I'm going to have around this, I'm going to make a little ball and then put a bigger ball around it to make an oval.
Let's step back.
And then I'll poach them.
This sounds delicious. Let's step back for a moment, because when you say gefilte fish, you sometimes get a visceral reaction. Some people say, ugh. Other people say,
right.
I would never have.
All my children do.
Do they really? Because I'm a huge fan.
Still, and they're in their 30s.
I'm a huge fan of gefilte fish, but I know of people who wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Describe to those of our listeners who aren't familiar with gefilte fish, what is gefilte fish? It's pretty simple, actually.
Well, originally it was considered filled fish. So that when I went on a food trip to Lithuania, they gave us filled fish. It was a skin of a fish made whole again, where the flesh had been cut out and mixed with eggs and bread, probably because it wasn't a Jewish event, onions, and then poached together to make filled fish. Gefilte means filled. But then as they got across the ocean, people got a little bit lazy, and they just made like fish balls or fish oblongs. And they poach them in water, and now they just put them, they bake them. I don't think it tastes as good, but they bake them in pans instead of the way that we do it in balls. And the only reason that I still do it in balls is because my mother-in-law did. And I just want to, sort of in deference to her, because it was really the first good gefilte fish I ever tasted. She would probably is turning over in her grave knowing that I'm going to try to make a pink and white gefilte fish. But I'm going to. And then the other thing that we do, there's a lot of eggs at Passover. And what I do is I learned this recipe a few years ago when I was doing my latest book, Quiche, Kugels, and Couscous, My Search for Jewish Cooking in France, I read in an old French Sephardic cookbook that people took eggs and put them in sand and then covered them and then baked them basically in the hot sun overnight. So I took some clay sand, put it in a tagine, and then I'm just baking them for 12 hours, and they come out very creamy and delicious. So we'll eat that, and any leftover ones we'll put in, you know, an egg salad or whatever. At my Seder this year, because I wrote an article for the New York Times on Indian Jewish cooking.
I was going to get to that,
I'm doing one recipe. In fact, I don't know if you can smell it through the telephone. We're making date jam. We're cooking down the dates for 3 hours to make a syrup. And that's the haroset, because most of the Jews, first of all, the early Jews that came to India never had haroset. Haroset is something which is like the mortar that, Jews built, the bricks in Egypt. That came during the Babylonian exile in the 6th century B.C., so that Jews that make it, if they came directly from Israel, ancient Israel, to India, before that time, they don't even know about haroset.
Let's turn to that article that you wrote in last week's New York Times about Queenie Halegwa, a 78-year-old woman who lives in Kochi, India, and her traditions and her amazing collection of spices. Tell us about this section of Kochi, India.
Well, it's really interesting because it's just a tiny, there are less than 10 people in this community today. But on everybody, every tour guide takes you to Jewtown, which is where they, the Jews lived. And Queenie showed me Passover kitchens where people made these, where they had a separate kitchen. Everything, you know, in India, as you probably know, purity is something that's very important. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't, you know, have the caste system that they had. So that purity in food is important, and also just to be, not to be sick or whatever. And at Passover, the Jews were very, very careful. They would take their rice, which they eat during Passover, and they would go through them to make sure that there was nothing, like no regular wheat was in there or something that they couldn't eat. They would go through it very fastidiously. And they would leave this, and then in the winter, the spices were ready, so that they would actually go through the spices to make sure they were perfect, leave a portion in their Passover kitchen, and then use the rest for the rest of the year. So they would, you know, they would grind their spices as they needed them, but they'd put them when right from the field, so that they would be more pure in the Passover kitchen. The dishes were just delicious that I had.
Well, then there's Ofera Josephite, and she makes a chicken dish similar to Mrs. Halegwa's and adds a bit of a Mumbai touch. And what results is this coriander cumin chicken recipe. Tell us about it.
Well, it is just divine. I mean, I had tasted Queenie's, Mrs. Halegwa's, who I realized she's like last, you know, this is her family. She wouldn't change it. But this, but it was good. But there was it wasn't pretty. And I like dishes to be pretty. When I serve things, I think that's one of the things that a lot of Jewish women don't take the time to do. And it's not a lot of time to make something, you know, look as beautiful as it tastes. I think it's the same thing with gefilte fish that, you know, people would take it out of a jar, it tasted like sand. But if you make it yourself and you spend some time on it and think about good food, then it tastes good.
It needs a carrot on its nose, right?
It needs a carrot, a little parsley or
right.
dill, and some good horseradish. And that's, I just made it yesterday.
I was going to say homemade horseradish, not the stuff from a jar.
Exactly. And that's what I use. But actually, if I have any leftover horseradish from a jar, for some other reason during the year, I put it with mine because it's very strong. It's a little one of my touches. But anyway, so I'm going to make the chicken, the Indian chicken, but not with rice. I'm going to make it with quinoa.
Oh, interesting.
And I guess
quinoa would fit the rules of Passover, right?
Right, because it's a grass. And And my, you know, my brisket, and I always look at all these new recipes, but I really think my brisket's a great brisket. So it's just a classic with a lot of wine and herbs and cooking it very long.
Well, I'm gonna have to. We know brisket out here in Kansas City, but we usually smoke the brisket out here. But you know, this brings up another point I wanted to talk with you about, which is some of the dishes that my family has made over the years. And a few years ago, we decided to put aside a number of those traditional dishes that we had cooked for Passover, like brisket or some orange chicken. Not because they're bad, but because we've been eating the same thing for decades, it seemed. So I turned to your book, The Foods of Israel Today. And that year, I made Doro Wat. That's going to sound familiar to any listeners who have ever had Ethiopian food, but not similar to Jewish listeners for Passover. It has chicken. It has an egg.
Right.
And it was delicious.
Oh, yeah, it's really good. That's a good one.
And then another year, I made a lamb tagine, which I thought was thematic there for Passover as well.
Well, that, of course, if you were very religious, you wouldn't do lamb. Basically, roast lamb, you wouldn't have roast lamb, roast shoulder of lamb. Mm-hmm. Roast leg of lamb isn't kosher until the temple's rebuilt in Jerusalem.
Right.
But if you're a Reformed Jew, you can have roast lamb. So that's, another question. And I learned that for these people in India, they don't eat a lot of meat, again, because of the Brahmins probably or whatever. They eat chicken at home, and they have fish, but they don't eat meat. So they would probably have lamb if they were living, let's say, in Ethiopia. And the traditions of using lots of spices came earlier than Christianity to Judaism and, to that part of the world. People were looking towards the east for the spices, the spice root. And so the Indians would have had probably not so different from Doro Wat. I mean, I hadn't thought about it, but, it's spicy chicken. But what I like is the wet masala because then it gives it color.
Hmm.
And I guess that's what I was saying, that I love the taste of Mrs. Halegwa's, but I liked Afira's recipe because it had tomato, and of course tomato is way late, like probably got there in the 17th, 18th century, and cilantro, which they, of course, had, and mint. It's a really nice combination.
By the way, I'm planning on making it this year, and three young children are not going to stop me from making that dish this year.
Oh, okay. I'm making something else. It's a very old recipe this year. It's called beet eingemachs, and it's like a beet preserve, but there's a lot of ginger in it, so it's sweet, and yet it's going to be a wonderful accompaniment to my brisket, and it's something from Lithuania. So, each year I try to add something from the Jewish world, and that comes from my Jewish Holiday Kitchen, one of my earliest cookbooks.
Hmm. Well, you just tweeted that it isn't Passover without matzo ball soup. What's the trick to great matzo ball soup?
Well, first of all, you have to look at my video in tabletmag.com.
We will post a link to that on our website, kcur.org.
And the other thing is, I used to think you had to simmer it for a long time, not so long, an hour or so. And then what I do is I leave it overnight, and then I skim off the fat. I always do that, and I use the fat for my matzo balls.
When you make matzo balls, do you use matzo meal, or do you grind your own matzo? What do you do?
No, I use matzo meal unless I'm out of matzo. And then I put ginger and nutmeg in them.
Oh, nice.
And a little bit of dill or else parsley. And mine are mostly sinkers. I like them to be a little bit al dente. I don't like them so light and fluffy.
I was going to ask if you're a fluffy or dense person, but you're somewhere in the middle there.
Yeah, I'm in the middle there.
Okay.
But I really like to be able to feel there's some matzo ball there.
Sure.
When my mother-in-law was alive, she used to make them very, very light with the mix where there's baking powder in the mix, and she'd separate the eggs. And I couldn't decide what to do after she died because everybody said, oh, we love your matzo balls. So I said to him, it was just a few weeks before Rosh Hashanah, I asked my son, well, what should I do? Should I make grandma's or mine? He said, please make yours. We've always said we like grandma's, but we want yours. So I didn't make her matzo balls, I made mine.
You've been the host of a Passover Seder for 3 decades, and you wrote you wrote this last year in the New York Times. By the time the 40-plus guests arrive at my home and are seated around the mismatched tables and chairs, I will let out a deep sigh of relief. I will also probably get chills, knowing that I'm following what was written in the Bible more than 2,500 years ago. We may not, quote, eat the flesh that same night roasted over fire, unquote, as the book of Exodus says, but we still eat unleavened bread, bitter herbs, and many other dishes added to the original meal. Joan, as far as Jewish holidays go, where would you put Passover?
Oh, I put it's way up there. For me, I like doing it. For Yom Kippur, I know I used to have a break the fast, and I realized that people just ate and left, and I don't do that anymore. I like to stay away from food for the whole day and think. But Passover, for me, is the most meaningful holiday. And then I guess Rosh Hashanah, again, people go to synagogue and then they linger afterwards if they come to my home. And I like that because I think that a holiday for every religion is not just thinking about God, if you believe in God, but it's also thinking about community. Whether it's family or the general community or the greater community. And I think it just feels right. You know, it's a wonderful way to celebrate. And this year we're having a smaller Seder than we usually do. We're having about 20 people.
No, only 20 people.
I got just added 2 extra people. One is a 94-year-old man who called and asked if he could come. And, of course, I'll have him come. And then a 19-year-old student at GW was interning with me and said she couldn't afford to go home to her parents and was thinking of going to Whole Foods and getting a Seder.
Oh, no. Joan Nathan, thank you so much for taking time with us today.
And Chag Sameach. Thank you very much. Chag Sameach.
Thanks.
You.
Now when Israel was in Egypt land,
let my people go.
Oppressed so hard they could not stand.
Let my people go.
So the Lord said, go down.
Go down.
Moses.
Way down
in Egypt land. Tell old Pharaohs to let my people go.
Let